Shall we begin?
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel, and we're welcoming you to this week's Dishin' and Swishin' podcast. And we're going to put a wrap on the college basketball season. And there's nobody better to talk about what went on in the NCAA tournament than the man that was locked in the studio for many, many hours with a couple of beautiful and intelligent women, and also out in Indianapolis with them. But it's great to welcome back Kevin Negandhi. Kevin, welcome back to the podcast. How you doing today?
David, it's a pleasure. Really looking forward to this. Thank you for having me on.
Always a pleasure. You know, I was looking back, to the last time you were, it was 3 years ago that you started to do some hosting for NCAA women's basketball now. So it's been, you're a veteran of the wars now.
Yeah, I was telling Kara and Rebecca that I can't believe it's been 4 years. And Rebecca, you know, she's been with us for three, and it was Kara's 11th Final Four, as an analyst here for us in studio. It has flown by, and I had a joke with Gino. Gino and I, obviously, I've known him a little bit beforehand, with SportsCenter and stuff, but Gino and I know similar people, similar relationships back in the Philadelphia area, so I can joke around with him at any time about anything. And, I made a mention to him. I said, Gino, I'm 4 for 4 now with his group as well, so I'd like a ring as well because, I came in, you haven't lost a Final Four yet. And he got a kick out of that. So I don't expect to get anything from UConn, but it's been amazing to watch the dynasty for the last 4 years with that trio.
Wow, so it's been 4 years. I thought it was only three. That's unbelievable. And just for people that don't know, you and I had talked about going back to your days at Temple. People don't know that you have had a long love for women's basketball, and this isn't just something that, you got thrown into at ESPN because they needed somebody. But to recap for our listeners, can you just talk about your background in women's basketball and how you got involved?
Sure, David. My first opportunity to do play-by-play, I grew up as a kid that wanted to do play-by-play and get the chance to host SportsCenter. So I think the chance to do both, I've been really lucky. And, when I was a sophomore in college at Temple, Coach Chaney in the men's basketball program at Temple was a dominant powerhouse. And they would not allow, the local radio station there, the university radio station was a very well-known radio station. It wasn't really a kids' college orientated radio station. So we had professionals do the men's games, and we were afforded the opportunity to do the women's games as college students. So I jumped on that, and I did play-by-play for the women's team for 3 years. And let me tell you, it is a challenge, and you learn so much in such a short period of time because you're doing 35 games, in a span of 4 months, traveling around just like the team, and you get that full experience. And, Temple, at the time that I was doing the games, I will put it kindly, they were not good. So you challenged to figure out how to fill time and handle situations where it's a two and a half hour broadcast, and what are you filling in, what are you saying, when there is a blowout, how are you handling the back and forth with three different, color guys that I've had in those 3 years. So it was one of the best experiences I could ever have because it allowed me to think on my feet. It carried over to whatever I wanted to do on TV because all you're doing is ad-libbing. And it gave me the full respect to understand that the work that's put in by the women across the board is the same as the men and that they deserve equal opportunities when it comes to coverage, when it comes to respect, and when it comes to understanding. And I've been lucky to go through that. And And then, you know, two decades later to be asked to do the women's tournament, I thought it was kind of like a full circle thing for me.
And what it shows in your coverage, the respect that you have for the people and the time they put in, because, you know, before your group took over, before it was you and Kara and Rebecca, and, you know, not a disrespect of anybody that had worked on the tournaments or such before, but, you know, it was always seemed like the second string. And now it seems like we've got our own big-time team that really can cover everything and does it so fluidly and so well.
David, I appreciate that compliment. I will say that I learned a lot from Trey Wingo, the guy that I replaced. Trey was great with my adjustment and understanding. You know, Trey had told me about the opportunity, and one of the things he told me, and I really admire Trey in doing this and look up to him, because he was like, it'll make you a great broadcaster. And I was like, help me understand. He's like, the first weekend is so hectic, and there are so many things going on, you're not going to know what's going to hit you. And then you're going to come out of this, and you're going to be like, wow, okay, I literally can do anything. And I'm telling you, that first weekend, I remember calling Trey and like, just, you weren't lying to me, Trey. This is the hardest thing I've ever done. And so my fourth year here, this past tournament, that first weekend was so challenging, but I was so lucky, and I say that all the time, to be working with Kara and Rebecca, that I can give them anything, and they can handle any situation. And the cool thing is that we can have fun by doing it. We can also get serious. And they allow me to explore a conversation with them because they trust me. And that is the best feeling as a host, that if your analysts trust you, they're going to give you opportunities where you can create conversation and you can bring out compelling storylines. And when we're watching a game, Kara will say something, and she's comfortable to say it because she knows that when I bring it up, I'm going to put her in the right position. And at the same time, I can challenge Kara or Rebecca on something that I've heard them say and push them a little bit, and they'll allow me to do that. And when you can do that, I think the audience benefits because you're getting a real analyst take. You're not getting something that's rehearsed. You're not getting something that's fake. You're getting a true opinion.
Which actually leads me to my next question. One of the things I wanted to ask you was, How much of what we see is prepared? Because it really does seem spontaneous. Even if it's something that has gone over, you guys have that ability. Because, of course, you're always shifting on the fly because you never know what happened in that game at halftime and the next game that's at halftime or in between games. So, yeah, how much is pre-rehearsed other than the recorded bits?
Okay, so I'll give you an idea. We go over one thing. Because they want to have their video match where they have breakdown videos. So coming out of the game, hypothetically, the first comment we're going to get, I'm just going to ask them about a vibe or a feeling or something they saw. And then when it comes to breakdown, I'll ask Kara or Rebecca, where do you guys want to go? And they'll give me literally one line on a topic, and then I will shape it that way and take them there. Now, here's the thing, and what's great about our two producers, and, you know, Mike Knopf and Chris Riviesto, what they do is I tell them, after that, I'm good. And they allow me that space because, hypothetically, we'll get a breakdown from Carol, we'll get a follow-up from Rebecca and a breakdown as well. I can come back and say, well, what about this? And it'll be something I may have heard from them. It may be something that I'm thinking of as a viewer and as a fan that I want to hear from them. Or maybe something like, there was a piece that we ran during the tournament in the Final Four, and it was about the letters to, you know, the freshmen. The big three wrote letters to themselves.
Yes.
And Mike Dizanoff Dees tells me that we're doing that, and I tell him, all right, so I'm tossing to this piece, right? And he goes, yeah. I said, all right, just give me some space. And he gave me the space. And Kara and Rebecca looked at me, and, you know, Dees knew that I was going to have a setup. But I was not telling Kara or Rebecca. And I didn't want them to know. So coming on camera, I kind of surprised Kara, and I said, what would you tell yourself as a freshman? And there was a little pause, and she had to think about it. And she gave us a fantastic answer about Pat Summitt. Here's what's great. Then Rebecca followed up with a fantastic, hilarious answer about how she would hate Gino Auriemma for 2 years. That's what she would tell her freshman self. That was not rehearsed. That was me getting the trust of my analyst, and that was me just saying, let me explore this space with them because I think we're going to get our best stuff. And it turned out we got two great stories about legendary coaches with legendary players and what they would say to themselves. And that's one of the things that I love about what our producers do. They give me that space. The analyst, Karen Rebecca, trust me, and then I can explore it.
And I saw that, and that was great. I happened to be watching at that point, and I did think that those were great answers, too. And, especially Rebecca's. I got a real kick out of that.
What you're seeing is all, it's all real. Like, it's all genuine. Like, everything, like, Rebecca's answer, no one had a clue that she was going to say that. So what you're getting is genuine responses from us. And like you just said, you're chuckling a little bit, and that's the whole point, because you're getting something real on the air. And too often at times, you watch shows, you watch pregame or postgame shows, and everything's like, do this, do that, do this. And we kind of take something from the group at TNT where we're like, let's just talk. Let's have some insight, but let's talk about it and be respectful at the same time. But let's give the audience something that they're going to walk away with, and they're going to have a moment or a story that they're going to remember and look back fondly.
And I think that definitely comes across. Let's talk for a couple minutes about a couple of the things that came up during this tournament. One is, of course, the whole Dan Shaughnessy thing. I don't want to beat to death, but I saw you chime in the day that he first posted his tweet about how UConn was killing the game, joining right in criticizing his approach to that. And I thought that that was something that showed a lot about you and that what we were talking about earlier about your love for the game itself.
Yeah, you know, I got a little emotional that day and defensive. And, you know, sometimes 140 characters can't do it justice. Looking back, I think the two takes that I would have just hit on and kind of dropped it and left it at that was, you know, look at the game after John Wooden, and you can't say that it hurt the game. There's no way anybody can say the dominance of those UCLA teams hurt men's college basketball. And, you know, my second opinion would have been, are you just scoreboard watching? Because anybody can have an opinion that, oh, this is bad for something if you're scoreboard watching. If you're not watching UConn play, and that means play a full 40 minutes, then you have no idea what's going on and why you would think or suggest it's bad for the game. You have no idea. Because if you're watching them play, there's nothing that they do that is bad for the game. You're watching basketball at its highest point on the women's side. It's beautiful. What you see on the defensive side, what you see on the offensive side with those three players, and then to bring in, you know, a freshman like Katie Lou and Kia, and then you don't miss a beat with the bench. That, to me, it felt like it was the biggest troll tweet ever. And he validated that and justified it the night of the championship when he put out some stupid tweet about the score and leaving starters in. And I wanted to respond, but I didn't want to give him the time of day anymore. But I was wondering if he felt the same way when Villanova and Jay Wright had his team out there full blast against Oklahoma with an enormous lead.
Well,
and that's what gets me, like, how teams are judged on the men's side. Oh, this is phenomenal. This is great. This is dominant. On the women's side, it's unwatchable. And I don't understand where that's coming from. To a certain extent, it feels like, at least from the responses I've seen on Twitter, and it comes from an audience that's insecure, that's unaware, that has never sat down to watch an extensive college basketball game on the women's side. They just form a take. And it really struck a nerve, and I thought Gino handled it really well the next day, shutting it down and then moving on, because I've never heard winning be bad for anything, ever, on any level. And it's ridiculous that that was even part of the discussion. But, David, you and I could talk about it, this, because we're part of the media. It did trigger conversation more than ever, and I'm sure it triggered probably a curiosity more than ever. But it's not Geno's fault. It's not UConn's fault that they play so well. It's not Geno's fault that he develops talent. He doesn't get the best players every single year. He may get the best player, but it's what he does with that talent, developing them on with their time in 3 years, 4 years on campus. And the difference is on the women's side, these players stay there 3-4 years. You could probably say the same thing if we look at some of the dominant recruiting classes that Kansas or Kentucky or North Carolina have had through the years, if they had players that stay longer than a year. We may see something like that down the road if the rules ever change, that you had to say 3 years in the NBA. I mean, before you go to the NBA. You know, so it's a fascinating spin on how it came out and the result, but I just look at the numbers, and to take anything away from UConn by criticizing them is dumb, especially when they handle their business, and it's not their fault that we saw teams like Oregon State, Syracuse, and Washington make it for the first time. It shows that there's better basketball out there underneath them, and that sometimes parity does win out on the women's side. It's not just about, you know, the dominant blue bloods, and we saw that this year.
Well, you know, the other thing that people didn't seem to jump on that, you know, bothered me about it is this is college. So what happens? They graduate. This happened to be a transcendent class. Those three combined won't be seen for many, many moons. And, you know, people forget about Baylor and how they were when Brittany Griner and Odyssey Sims were there. And they, you know, you could go over this, you know, and, of course, Tennessee going all the way back. But now let me ask you to respond to another statement that I heard a lot, and that is that UConn isn't bad for the sport, but ESPN's coverage of UConn and constantly shoving them down our throats is what's bad for the sport.
I find that funny because I don't know, you know, is it ESPN's coverage of UConn or ESPN's coverage of greatness? Because you could say the same thing that we go full tilt on the Golden State Warriors.
Thank you.
We went full tilt on Carolina, the Panthers, when they were undefeated. So we just cover teams that are, listen, we're in the business of covering, you know, and monitoring teams that win games. And if that means we're covering a team that wins, what's wrong with that? And I think there's a curiosity, a fascination. We wouldn't be doing our jobs if we're not covering the best player in the sport. And we basically do the same thing with Steph Curry and LeBron James. We did that for Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. So I get a kick out of people. No matter what, people always dump on ESPN because it's the easy thing to do. I feel like it's what sheep do. It's the trendy thing to do. It's like picking on the Yankees. If they're not picking, or if they're not, like, you know, throwing stones at us, then maybe we're not doing something right. Because, listen, we cover and we document teams that are great. And like you just said, this class, this trio is so unique and so special that I felt like what we did in our coverage with them was completely fair. And if there was a team that was going to knock them off, we would have gone all in on that team. But for anybody to say that we're biased towards one team and we have an agenda, I don't think they follow it enough. And I think also there's a sense of jealousy and bitterness. And here's another thing I'll say from the outside perspective. When outsiders say that, oh, it's too much UConn, I guarantee you next year there's going to be one storyline. When's UConn going to lose? And then if that happens, because I think it's going to, then it's going to be who else is in the field. And you're going to find out there are 6 to 11 to 12 teams potentially that could be in the Final Four and that could give UConn a real run. And that's why I think this past weekend you saw Geno so emotional because he was realizing, hey, I know I got a special group here, and I'm not sure down the road if I'm going to be able to duplicate what I'm going through right now.
You know, it's one of those things, you said exactly what my response had been, and that was, look at Golden State, and, you know, I feel that Steph Curry is sometimes stuffed down our throats, but I can't argue with the coverage of the man because he's doing things that nobody's done. So that's what you're supposed to cover. People don't factor in that there's limited time, limited space, and what's the big story. But I still think, you know, in my opinion, part of women's basketball's problem in growing as a sport is the our girl syndrome. And I think that people want to see that, you know, people from out west are still saying that the Pac-12 is disrespected and we should have seen reports on more stories on Kelsey Plum in Washington and on Oregon State. When you have limited time, you got to cover the big story.
Yes. Completely agree. And, you know, David, this is one of those things that I don't think it's really on the women's game. It's going to be everywhere because we hear it all the time. Well, why do you cover the Yankees and Red Sox? Where are the Giants? Where are the Dodgers? Where's this? Where's that? It's no matter what. I've been here for 10 years. I've come to the conclusion that no matter what we do, we're going to get blamed for it. No matter what we do, people will always feel slighted. I get stuff all the time. Everybody hates Philadelphia. And I've told many, many followers, like, never once have I ever heard somebody say, don't cover this because it's Philly. But people have this mentality that it's the world is against them. And they carry that over into their love for sports, and it's never enough. It's never enough. Now, sometimes I'll be real here. Sometimes I'm like, I don't want to see LeBron's tweets all the time on SportsCenter. And we've done a good job of reducing that. We were in a stage a few years ago where it was just like everything LeBron ever tweeted, it suddenly let's put it on SportsCenter, no matter what the topic is. And I was like, come on. I think we've gotten away from that, and we've done a little bit better in understanding that, I'm just using this as an example because it's the NBA. Like, it's not just Golden State. It's the Spurs. It's Kevin Durant. It's clearly what's going on in Cleveland. We've done a very good job of making sure the audience is aware of what's happening in Toronto, and here come the Heat, and the Bulls falling apart. So no matter what, people are never going to be satisfied. And here's another thing, David. Like, if they watch a snippet of TV, they think that that's what the coverage is and that's it. And I'm sorry, but we have people who don't sit there and watch 2-3 hours of coverage, but maybe in that third hour, there is something on, Kelsey Plum. I thought we did a fantastic job on covering, Washington's rise and, when you look at Plum's growth and Osahor and what we saw from Walton, and then we did a great job with Oregon State and explaining their story and where they came from, and then our coverage during the Final Four on Syracuse was fantastic and tying it in with Boeheim and, breaking down what they do from the outside with threes and the three guards and how tough they are and what they bring, to Syracuse. So no matter what, people are always going to be slighted. They're always going to find a way to complain.
So then what was your highlights from the tournament? Sitting there in the studio with Rebecca and Kara, what was the highlight for you when you were sitting there watching?
First off, I love listening to them because they are so smart. Perfect example, the night of the selection show, Kara in commercial break, after looking at the bracket, goes, watch Syracuse. I'm telling you, they're going to give South Carolina trouble. And I kept that in the back of my head. I would never, unless she was comfortable, I would never call her out on it. And then, when we were leading into that game that day in the Sweet 16, I said, you said it, watch Syracuse. And to me, it's great hearing them, I don't want to say predict things, but make observations and then see them come, through fruition. Like, they both said something. Kara immediately said when we were watching the Washington game, the first minute she goes, watch Zero, watch Osahor. And then Rebecca started talking about Osahor as the game was progressing, and everything they were saying turned out to be true. So I love, those are, to me, the moments where I'm like, this is fantastic. I'm getting in their brains, and I'm understanding certain things that people aren't anticipating, and then we get to see it at the back end of things where they made comments about two teams that we eventually saw surprise everyone and make it to the Final Four. And that, to me, is so cool about my job because I get the behind-the-scenes look. And I thought it was cool. I thought the Washington story was fantastic. And where Oregon State was, you know, a few years ago with all those, you know, tryouts, and to see Syracuse get there for the first time, I thought those storylines were great. And, of course, the other cool thing was, and I made a comment to Kara, and Kara actually brought it up on the air the night of the championship, was, when we sit down to the Final Four, we sit down with the players. We have our own little, you know, interview meeting with the players. And I'll never forget Stewie the first year. And she walked in the room week for her meeting with us. And I quietly said to Kara, I cannot believe how completely commanding and different Stewie is right now. And she was like, yeah, isn't that cool? I said, yeah. I said, because you know, you go from an 18-year-old to a 22-year-old where the limelight, you're a superstar, and you forget the difference in maturity and the growth that goes on in college. And to me, that was just so cool that 4 years later, I saw a completely different person command the room and have the confidence that Stewie has. And you're like, all right, she's a superstar on and off the court.
You're exactly right. That was one of the things that I know. It's funny. I noticed that this year. Of course, you know, I cover UConn, so yeah. I'm seeing them, you know, behind the scenes a little bit. And you know, the one thing that I had noticed was not just her, also, but also Jefferson. The two of them, the way that they grew up. And Tuck seems like she was 35 years old when she was a freshman.
exactly.
Yeah. And Gino intimated that, basically, throughout the whole all of her career. But those two just are, you know, become tremendous people. And it's kind of neat to see, that's for sure. And it'll be great to follow them all into the WNBA and see what happens next.
It's very satisfying to see, you know, student-athletes, and I sound like I'm as a father now, I can look at it differently, but I sound like an old man when I say this, but it is very satisfying to see the growth of teenagers into, you know, adults in their early 20s. There's just a coolness to it where you're like, yeah, I remember when, and then, of course, you know, those people don't remember it. It's just part of the process, but this is an observation from the outside. And David, you and I get the chance to experience that, and that's one of the cool parts of the game.
It absolutely is. It's one of the things that's the most enjoyable is seeing that. And I wish that more people could see that and realize that these are kids that are growing up in the limelight, and what it does, you know, for them as people as well, both positive and negative. So.
Yeah.
You know, well, anyway, Kevin, I think we've talked enough and I've kept you long enough. I think that this is a perfect wrapping on the tournament. I personally think the coverage was phenomenal. I love the, you know, if everybody is going to complain about the whip around and the not enough channels and all of those things, and I'm sure you would like to see it on every channel that ESPN owns too. But
I got to tell you, David, real quick, I think we've done a better job this year at awareness and sending you out to other games if there is a blowout. And I also think that, you know, the opportunity to have the Watch ESPN app where you can watch any game anywhere affords people that chance to do that, where they have the luxury and the comfort that you get the main game and then you can watch it somewhere else. And, you know, it's a fight that we're always going to have. I think that we'll always try and push the button to see if we can go to other games a little bit earlier. And I just want to let the audience know that we understand. We understand how they feel, and we're going to do our best to make sure we can bring all the games to you.
Unless you live in Connecticut, and then you're going to be watching the blowout the entire time.
But you got internet, and you can go to watch ESPN.
Exactly. Kevin, thanks again. Enjoy a little bit of downtime away from basketball, and you know, we'll look forward to seeing you on SportsCenter again. Why don't you tell everybody where you're on so they can follow you again on ESPN this spring and summer?
So I go back to shocking my body, and I go to the Monday morning sports center at 7 a.m. So that means a 3 a.m. wake-up call every day. And we started the day after the Super Bowl, made its debut. So I look forward to joining that bunch again. It's a great crew, and I'm very lucky to move from one crew to the other and how everybody adjusts with me. So I can't wait. So 7 a.m., 7 to 10 every Monday through Friday morning on SportsCenter. And David, before I go, I want to thank you. I love following you on Twitter. You do a great job covering the women's game, and I wish more people were aware of it. I'll do my best to make sure it gets out there.
Kevin, thanks again. And again, you're absolutely right. You do a great job in getting it out there. And thanks for all the support. I appreciate it.
You got it. Take care, David.
You too. Bye-bye.